and my fellow Pennsylvanians.
This state's electoral votes are key to who wins the presidency, and both of the candidates know it.
We win Pennsylvania, we win the whole deal. You know that. Just like last time.
But states like Pennsylvania are going to be incredibly important.
The only thing left on the board is Pennsylvania. The president cannot get to the finish line without the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania.
One state all four candidates are visiting today is Pennsylvania. Its 20 electoral votes are highly coveted, and the Keystone State could end up being one of the determining factors in the race.
Jill's a Philly girl. Well, I'm a Scranton guy.
Oh, Pennsylvania, we love Pennsylvania.
May come down to Pennsylvania.
I have so many memories from Northampton County. Literally the best field trip ever in elementary school was to the Crayola factory in Easton. Later on, I got to meet His Holiness, the Dalai Lama, at Lehigh University in Bethlehem. Many, many Sundays, I was either kayaking or fishing or both on the Lehigh River. But today on PA Kitchen Table Politics, we're not going to talk about my childhood. We're going to do a deep dive into what is arguably the most purple county in the Commonwealth. As many of you know, there were three Pennsylvania counties that voted for Obama in 12 and then flipped to Trump in 16. Northampton then flipped back to Biden. You know, Northampton voters were also the only across 67 counties that mirrored statewide trends. They voted for Josh Shapiro in his reelection for attorney general, but then they voted against the two Democrats that were running for auditor and state treasurer. I'm really looking forward to the discussion we're going to have with the leading expert on Northampton County, the county executive, Lamont McClure. He's going to guide us through the mindset of county voters, demographic and economic trends, and something which is really underappreciated and deserves a much longer discussion, the mechanics of administering an election during a pandemic when the eyes of Washington and, dare I say, the world are on your county employees. Since 2006, when he got onto county council, Lamont's been serving his community. He's now in his second year. It's been a historic year as executive. And Mr. Executive, welcome to my kitchen table.
Oh, Ari, thank you so much for having me at your table. I'll have some tea, sugar, a little cream, please. As you told your guests, I'm Lamont McClure. I'm the county executive, county of Northampton in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. And some of your listeners may know that we're a bellwether in terms of who might win the presidential election. We usually pick the right president.
So let's plunge deep into the data. President Biden, it's great to say President Biden, he won by only 0.7%, 2,000 votes. President Trump, he won by 5,400 votes. And you take a look at President Obama, he won by 6,000 votes. So you're one of the few counties in Pennsylvania, I believe only two counties in Pennsylvania, that was an Obama county, a Trump county, and now a Biden county. So demographically, it's also fascinating. There's 55% of registered voters are Democrats, but that clearly means folks are splitting their tickets. So it'd be very interesting if we could speak to that and kind of tease out who are these exotic swing
voters. Well, Ari, we're the quintessence of a purple county now. And that really is emblematic of our bellwether status. As you know, and you just let your listeners in on, Vice President, now President Biden, won Northampton County. And just by way of a little bit of background, we were done counting our votes by 5 a.m. the next morning. So the bellwether had rung by 5 a.m. Wednesday morning when others throughout the Commonwealth and throughout the country were still counting the votes. So it was very important for us to put on a legal, fair, and accurate election. But it was also because of our bellwether status, very important that we get our results out efficiently and everyone understood that our votes were cast and counted fairly and accurately, and they were. Now, you're talking about the demographics of our county, which makes us a bellwether. Well, we're about 83.3% white. We're about 6% African-American, and we're about 14.2% Hispanic. So we're just a little less African-American than the Commonwealth, a little more Hispanic than the Commonwealth, and on average white with respect to the balance of the Commonwealth. So we are a pretty good demographic indicator of the Commonwealth. As you pointed out, we have more registered Democrats than Republicans. And you referenced ticket splitting. There may be some of that, but the fact of the matter is we are a very competitive county.
Let's unpackage that a bit. You were first elected, got into county government in 2006. Demographics have changed since then, but anecdotally, if we can just kind of talk through that. I imagine that the Hispanic community's grown, if you can talk a little about that. And then the nature of white voters, so overall economy of Northampton County.
Well, when I first came to county government, as you said, in 2006, we were about 90% white. We may have even been over 90% white. And most of the growth in our demography has been in the Hispanic community. I would say that has been, and like I said, we're up to 14.2% now. And I think that's been the largest increase in a demographic group. Our economy is diverse. As you know, we are a stone's throw from Manhattan. We're very close and interconnected to Philadelphia. And of course, I'm right across the river from New Jersey. So we are interconnected with some of the most active economic centers in the world. We're right in the heart of the Boswash Corridor, which, Ari, as you know, is one of the great economic drivers in all of, throughout the globe, not just in the eastern United States, not just in the United States, not just in North America, the globe. The Boswash Corridor is very, very economically vibrant, and we're right in the heart of it.
You know, down here in Washington, we call it the Acela Corridor. If only we could get a high-speed rail to Northampton County, but we'll leave that for another discussion. Right. Probably need some adult beverages and more than tea for that discussion.
Right.
So what, I mean, going back, you know, it seems like ages ago, but when you first ran for office, what compelled you to public service? And then also, if you could speak, you know, Northampton's one of the few counties that has an executive instead of three commissioners. If you could speak to county government as a whole.
Sure, Ari. I was literally born into the notion that public service was a value that my family was demonstrating. My mom was a school board member, and she was the first woman to be a president of her school board. My dad was a lifelong public servant. He started out his public career in his 20s, being the city manager of the city of Scranton. He then went on to be a borough manager and ultimately to be a housing authority director for 35 years, almost until the day he died. So public service was deeply ingrained in me. And I practiced law in the private sector for 20 years, but I had always known that part of what I must do is give back because I had been given so much. And that's what I'm doing.
You know, I bet you did not always know that you were going to be plunged into a pandemic in your second year as a county executive. Could you speak to that? I mean, just to the extent you're ready to open up, I mean, emotionally, how do you manage, how do you lead a workforce that's switching in part to virtual? Then obviously, as a Democrat, with an eye to one of the most historic and consequential elections, I mean, what a whirlwind year you've had.
Well, sure. You know, and I think we've shown steady leadership throughout the pandemic. And I think I'm using the word steady because it was important to demonstrate not only to our 2,200 person workforce, we have about a $455 million annual budget with about a half a billion dollar pension fund. So it was very important for us to demonstrate competence and confidence moving forward, as well as courage and compassion. And we really had to balance two competing interests. We had to try and crush the pandemic. And what we did, unlike most counties throughout the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, we have 67 of them, as you know, we actually formed collaboratives with local hospitals to provide free COVID-19 testing for our citizens. We first collaborated with Easton Hospital. They were then purchased by St. Luke's Hospital. And then we collaborated with Coordinated Health, a division of Lehigh Valley Health Network, and we are testing people for free in Northampton County today. So we were on the one track of crushing the pandemic. On the other track, we had to help try and keep our small businesses afloat. We had to throw them a lifeline to help them survive and thrive. And what we did was we took some of our CARES Act money and we created the Pandemic Protection Plan. And we gave $15,000 grants to 800 small businesses, businesses that employed less than 100 people, for a total of over $10.7 million And what we've heard from so many of these small businesses is they have been able to survive through this pandemic because of our pandemic protection plan and the $10 million+ we put on the street. Now, you're hearing 800 businesses. Remember, we're one of 67 counties, one of 3,084 in the entire country. We only have a little slice of the world. But in our little slice of the world, we handled our business.
I've got so many great memories from Northampton County. And when I think, I mean, you really have the kind of quintessential Main Street USA, whether it be up in the Slate Belt or the south side of Bethlehem by Lehigh University, or certainly the Renaissance that's happened in Easton. And then certainly, you know, there's the suburban feel. But that's great to hear. That sounds like a model that should happen more and more. Well, hopefully we'll get out of this pandemic and we won't need to focus on that. What if we can go back, though, and share with listeners that the form of government is different, for example, than right next door in Bucks County, where there's three commissioners who are elected countywide. So if you could speak to your council, both with your former eye as being a councilman working with an executive and your current eye, an executive working with a council.
So most of the people in Pennsylvania who will listen to the show will be familiar with the three commissioner form of government. Two members of the majority party that win the election and one guaranteed member of the minority party. And then they are responsible for both the legislative and executive branches of their respective governments. So they are a unitary executive and legislature, and they run the entire county. What any two of them decide is what will happen in that particular county, administratively and otherwise. The Constitution of Pennsylvania, as amended, allows for what's called home rule. And in 1978, Northampton County became a home rule county. And what Northampton County did was create a governing body, a legislative body, and they called it the Northampton County Council. It has 9 members. It has 5 members who are elected at large. It has 4 members who are elected by district. And they also created an independent office of county executive, which is independently elected. Now, other home rule counties throughout the Commonwealth have handled this differently. For example, in Luzerne County, a relatively new home rule county, they have an 11-member board and a appointed administrative official. Their manager is not elected. He is appointed and serves at the pleasure of the board. Not so here. I am independently elected, and I am responsible with administering the executive branch of the home rule county government.
I want to go back to the 2020 primary. For some, it seems like probably 5 years ago at this point, we're recording here the last week of January, but you're testing your residents, you're keeping the morale of your workforce high, and you're also tasked with running a successful primary election, which certainly was postponed. But if you could walk us through that and how, just the mechanics of how one does
that. Well, so our primary went flawlessly, which is amazing, because as you know, Ari, elections are human endeavors. And whenever we endeavor to do anything, there are bound to be some mistakes. Not fatal, but some. And indeed, in our primary election, there were some mistakes made. However, for an election, ours was nearly flawless. And what we were doing was a test run for this general election, including, you know, social distancing at the polls, mask wearing, hand sanitizing. We did all those things in conjunction with the Pennsylvania Department of State under the leadership of Secretary Buchvar, who is amazing, by the way. What a tremendous job she does. And we had a dry run for what would occur in the fall, and it went very well. Ari, as you know, Pennsylvania is an odd hybrid system now. Jill Stein, after the 2016 election, filed a lawsuit against the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, which Governor Wolf ultimately settled. And as part of that lawsuit, we all had to discard the old DRE machines that we had. And we had to discard those as a part of the settlement of the lawsuit because there was some feeling that the old DRE machines were hackable, for lack of a better way to describe it. Hacking is not the right way to understand how these machines could be manipulated, but they were hackable. So there's a new generation of machines that are out now, which are far, far more secure. It doesn't mean a hacker, if they have 3 days with the thing by itself and they have all the manuals, they couldn't manipulate them. I mean, everything is manipulatable. But these machines now are as secure as they can possibly be under the current technology. And the thing that makes them almost almost entirely secure is that they all have a paper ballot backup. And that was, again, part of the settlement. And the paper ballot backup is subject to an audit after the election so that you can see what you have on the paper ballot matches what was on the machine. It is incredibly difficult to manipulate that. Fraud is almost impossible to perpetrate on these machines because of the paper ballot backup. So we had to go and buy new machines because of that settlement. And then the legislature, by the way, a Republican-controlled legislature. This is something that people miss a lot about mail-in voting in Pennsylvania. Mail-in voting was new in 2020 in Pennsylvania. And it was new because a Republican-controlled House of Representatives and Republican-controlled State Senate passed mail-in voting overwhelmingly. Folks, if you're listening to my voice, mail-in voting in Pennsylvania is a Republican idea. They disavow it now, but it's a Republican idea. Anyway, so we then had to implement two systems. We had to implement the new system, the in-person voting system with the paper ballot backup, and the mail-in voting system. And you were talking to me about the primary. Well, we had that trial run in the primary, and it went very well. And then, of course, the fall came.
Let's talk about the fall. I mean, you had not only like every county government and municipal government in America, you have a depletion of tax revenue, and you have now a budget line that mushroomed, I imagine. And you mentioned hand sanitizer. People might take it for granted, but someone had to buy all that hand sanitizer for all those polling locations and so many other costs. So how did you adapt to that? And then once again, you know, keeping the morale up as the national eyes were looking at your workforce, the nameless, faceless, incredible public servants that work for the county and administer elections.
Well, the first thing, you know, we had the Governor Wolf settlement where we had to buy the new paper ballot machines. And then we had the Republican legislature create mail-in voting. And we had to implement both of those systems in the same general election. And we had the highest turnout we've had in 100 years, by the way, over 75% in Northampton County, while we're trying to manage these two new systems. To answer your question specifically, our county council put in almost $1 million more dollars than it normally would in an election cycle. So we had a tremendously supportive county council.
Sorry to interject. What's the breakdown? I should tell our listeners of Democrats versus Republicans on the council.
I think it's 7-2 now.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay.
I'm sorry, 7 Democrats and 2 Republicans. But to make the point with respect to what we talked about earlier about being purple and very swingy, the majority on county council has changed multiple times since I've been involved in county government in 2006. So we're very swingy here in terms of our voting patterns in Northampton County. But it's currently 7-2 Democratic.
I would love, I think more importantly, our listeners would love to kind of peel away the onion, so to speak. I mean, when President Biden wins by only 0.7%, but registered Democrats on paper are 10% higher. It just means, I'm not good at math, but it means that a lot of registered Democrats are not voting for the Democratic standard bearer at the top of the ballot. So maybe if you could walk us through kind of neighborhoods, demographics of the 83% that you mentioned of white voters, and perhaps it's others, but let's kind of walk through swing vote USA.
Well, Ari, first things first, I'm not a pundit. Right. I'm an elected official. I'm a politician. I'm not an analyst. I'm not an expert on voting patterns or anything of that nature. One of the things I might say, though, it appears to me that former President Trump probably inspired higher turnout amongst the folks that would normally be predisposed to voting for him. And, you know, you talk about the difference in registration between Democrats and Republicans. But President Trump probably got 95% of the Republicans. So if you're getting 90 to 95% of any large group, you're going to be in the race no matter what, right? So it was always necessarily going to be close. But if you want to think about in very rudimentary terms, and again, I'm not a political science professor or anything, but take State Route 22, which essentially bisects Northampton County. Again, for your listeners, this, if you look at the map, it doesn't exactly, but in terms of population, it's probably pretty close to the population center of the county. So if you look at people who live south of Route 22, they overwhelmingly voted for President Biden. Okay. very heavily Democratic, even in some of the very heavily suburban Republican neighborhoods. President Biden did very well. That's south of 22. Now, north of 22, you have very pro-Trump voters. These are very Republican voters. Good people, by the way. We have a lot of great and good citizens here that don't always agree with everything that I do. I was a very strong supporter of President Biden. And I don't know if you know this, Ari, but in the primary, I actually endorsed our current vice president when she was still running for president. I thought when I looked at her, when I looked at Kamala Harris, I saw a president. And I believe I was the only elected official in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania to have endorsed her. So I am a partisan Democrat and I'm proud of it. But you know, I have many friends who live above 22 and who voted for former President Trump, and they're good people, but they just see the world differently than maybe you or I see it. But to be that as it may, they overwhelmingly voted for former President Trump. And I think more of them came out to vote than you would normally expect. I think something about his candidacy drew new people on their side or activated folks who are not as, you might not expect them to vote regularly. I think he did inspire extra turnout on their side. And then you have around 22, the suburbs, Hanover Township, Bethlehem Township, Palmer Township, Forks Township. And so President Biden wins heavily below. Former President Trump wins heavily above and along the 22, the townships, they tied. Essentially, that's what happened. You know, without me being a political analyst, that's what happened.
Thank you. And that was a great deep dive. I had not thought of it that way. I don't want to oversimplify, but when we look north of 22, folks refer to it as the Slate Belt. Maybe you want to tell listeners why they refer to it as
well,
the Slate
sure.
Belt.
Actually, there's north of 22 actually has a broad geographic area. Part of it is the Slate Belt, and that is sort of in our northeasternmost corner. There used to be slate quarries. There still are slate quarries there, but these were some of the largest and most active slate quarries in the world. And it's not so anymore, but that's why it was referred to as the Slate Belt, because there is slate there and was slate there to be mined. The western part of that district is more of a rural, when we're talking about above 22 in Northampton County, it's more rural. And it's got lots of preserved farmland and farmland that isn't preserved, but it has a very rural character, which is distinguishable from the Slate Belt. But the one thing that unites all the people above 22 is they're tending to vote Republican, and they're tending to vote Republican in presidential elections. And they were very pro-Trump. If you look at above 22 and look into western Northampton County, I think former President Trump got his best numbers there. I don't even think his numbers were as good in the Slate Belt as they were over in the rural and more farming-centered communities.
Thanks for clarifying. Is there one issue or two public policy issues you think that are driving these folks? For example, I can picture events I've done at the Rod and Gun Club. Is it the Second Amendment, or what do you think drove? And let's be honest. I mean, some of these folks are registered Democrats to this day, but what drove them in 16 and then again in November?
I think that if you're talking in terms of issues, I think immigration was a huge issue for these folks. I think they saw, look, I'm, again, not a political science professor, Ari, so you have to forgive me if I don't have all this analysis exactly right. But I think in their language, and when I'm talking, sort of describing what they're thinking, it's not what I think, but it's sort of my understanding what they think. They sort of hear this talk of open borders, and that kind of thing very much concerns them. They consumed a lot of media of stories about folks, people who were not in the country lawfully committing crimes. Certain news outlets go out of their way to highlight when someone who's not here, a person who is not here lawfully in the country, commits a crime. So that's one of the issues that I think was very compelling to them. I also think that the president appealed to a lot of things that they wanted to hear, making NATO pay its fair share, for example. And I use that as a symbol of the sort of issues that the president grabbed onto that are incredibly complex, but the former president didn't allow for the complexity to come through, right? It was just they need to pay their fair share. And I think that resonated with a lot of folks. Things like that.
Let me ask you, I mean, this is kind of crystal ball, which unfortunately neither one of us have. Do you see another figure on the horizon as we look at 2022? Northampton, as you said, bellwether, purple, whatever term we want to use, it's going to be up for grabs. We have the governor's race open. We have the Senate race open. I mean, do you see someone, as both parties kind of internalize and wrestle with which direction they're headed? Any scuttlebutt on the streets of Bethlehem or Easton or elsewhere?
I'm sorry, about what?
About candidates on the horizon for 2022. Or you know, if you're not comfortable mentioning names, I mean, what
are you talking about for governor and Senate? Or
exactly.
I'm only hearing the same things everybody else is hearing. Lieutenant Governor Fetterman thinking about a Senate bid. You have Attorney General Shapiro thinking about a gubernatorial bid. And, you know, you see people mentioning themselves a lot at this time of year, having people mention them. But that's what I'm hearing.
What type of candidate do you think? I mean, if you had a moldable piece of clay, what type of candidate can win by more than 0.7% in Northampton County? Or do you think that for the foreseeable future, your county is always going to be decided by less than a point?
If we're just talking about recent history, and you want to talk about, I'm a Democrat. I want Democrats to win. You want to talk about candidates who can do well.
That makes two of us, to be clear.
Okay. Thank you, Ari. Candidates who've done well, and you can go back and look at our numbers. Governor Wolf has done well here. Senator Casey has done well here. Attorney General Shapiro has done well here. So that gives you this sort of kind of Democratic candidate that can do very well in Northampton County. In terms of the Republicans, I've never really been able to figure the Republicans out. It just seems to me when they nominate the John Hineses and Tom Ridges of the world, we have a very hard time beating them. When they don't, we beat them. We beat them because they get too far away from the center of where people in the Commonwealth and in Northampton County want to be. I know it's fashionable to talk about this amongst the people, the chattering classes who get paid to talk about this stuff. But I think it's true. The further you get away from the center, the harder it is to win a general election. And that's why I said, you know, candidates like Governor Wolf, who ran very much as a centrist, candidates like Senator Casey, candidates like Attorney General Shapiro, they do very well here because they're perceived as being closer to the political middle. You might say to me, Ari, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but explain Trump, Lamont. I think former President Trump's a phenomenon that they will not be able to recreate. You know, he spent 35 years promoting himself. You couldn't use one of his venues in a movie unless he was going to be in the movie. I mean, he was an assiduous self-promoter. So folks really think they know him because they've been seeing him on big and small screens for almost four decades. So I don't think the Republicans can recreate that. I don't think it works very well for other people to try and mimic that style. I don't think it works for them. Because if people don't know you, you're getting to about 40%. And how do you grow past that? Again, not a pundit, but I'm just, you know, I'm somebody who is around them and listens to them talk. So, you know, I have this idea.
You're around a lot of folks and you're listening to a lot of folks talk, dare I say, eavesdropping. Look, we're a week into the Biden-Harris presidency. One of the discussions on the campaign trail and now in the last week is infrastructure. You mentioned Route 22. You know, this message of unity and bipartisanship, we all want that, and we all want our president to succeed. But what do you hear? I mean, what do you hear on the streets and amongst the folks up there in Northampton County?
I think unity and bipartisanship means something different at the federal level than it does at the local. When we're trying to get a bridge fixed, we don't ask anybody what their party affiliation is. We just go and fix the bridge. We run a county nursing home, which, you know, you alluded to the troubles we've had throughout the pandemic earlier. And I don't ask what they're registered, what party the residents are registered to. And we don't care who the LPNs vote for. We're just trying to care for people and keep people safe. So I think at the local level, the partisanship, although we all have our points of view, I think gets set aside because we understand at the end of the day, we'll be judged by the people we serve. Not by the names we call one another, but by the bridges we fix and by keeping a county-run nursing home, county-owned and open during a global pandemic. I think that's the kinds of things we'll be judged on. I think we'll be judged on the pandemic protection plan that we put together, where we tried to save 800 small businesses in our one little county with over $10 million on the street. And, you know, we worked with the Chamber of Commerce to do that. I'm a Democrat. I'm a partisan Democrat, but I reached out to the Chamber of Commerce to help us implement that plan, because we knew they'd know where the businesses were that needed the help. I'll work with anybody anytime in a bipartisan fashion to get things done. Republicans, independents, it doesn't matter. If you'll help me fix a bridge, keep somebody safe in a nursing home, throw a lifeline to a small business, I'll work with you. That's not just Lamont McClure. That's everybody who serves, not everybody, but most everyone who serves in public office in the Lehigh Valley and in Northampton County specifically.
And that is an excellent message. And I'm hoping that our many listeners in Washington, D.C. are internalizing that and taking that to heart. You have so much on your plate as we head into a new year and the 10th month of this awful pandemic. You've been very, very generous with your time. I, for one, am looking forward to so many things post-pandemic. One of them is Music Fest. And we'll just be curious what you're looking forward to as we hopefully in the near future return to whatever counts as normal.
Well, Ari, I want to get mass vaccinations done in Northampton County and the Lehigh Valley soon so that we can start to normalize life. I specifically want to get teachers vaccinated so kids can get back to school. I mean, I think one of the underreported stories on the pandemic, which I think will be huge news in the coming years, is the effect the pandemic has had on kids. But I want to leave you, because I know we're running out of time, with, I think, a message of hope. Northampton County was a bellwether county in the 2020 election. It's why we counted all night and reported our votes at 5 a.m. because we knew the Commonwealth, the country, and the world would be watching our results. But it wasn't just Democrats who did it. We have Democrats and Republicans in our election division. We have Democrats and Republicans on our election commission. We have Democrats and Republicans who serve as judges of elections throughout the county. And we had about 1,500 people, Democrats, Republicans, and independents, working as poll workers and put this election on together. The people who counted the votes were Democrats, Republicans, and independents working together in the same room. No one raised any issues. We put a legal, fair, and accurate election on, and that's because Republicans, Democrats, and independents all worked together. And everybody in this county, irrespective of their party, and irrespective of how they felt about the outcome of the election, if they actually worked on the election, they know the election wasn't rigged. They know there was no fraud because they worked together to put it on.
Amen. Amen. Well, Mr. Executive, thank you so much for stopping by my kitchen table. And more importantly, thank you for the work that you've been doing in the trenches over this difficult year.
Ari, if it's after 5 next time, I'll have a beer.
All right. Sounds like a plan.
Thanks.
Thank you all so much for listening to today's episode of Pennsylvania Kitchen Table Politics. As Hillary Clinton used to say, it takes a village. This podcast would not be possible without the help of Sarah McGrath and Jake Schwartz. If you liked this discussion, we would love for you to give us a review, subscribe, and rate us on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you have a suggestion on a future guest and other feedback, visit our website, papoliticspodcast.org. Don't forget to follow us on social media at PA Political Podcast on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn.